Sans Pants Radio, Australia's most cowardly podcast network.
Hello and welcome to Scaredy Boys, a podcast where three cowardly friends discuss horror movies. I'm Damien.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Tom.
And for this episode, we watched A Quiet Place Part 2. A Quiet Place Part 2 is a 2021 horror film and the sequel to the 2008 film A Quiet Place. Following the events of the first movie, the Abbott family now must face the terrors of the outside world. Forced to venture into the unknown, they realise the creatures that hunt by sound are not the only threats lurking beyond the sand path.
Johnny Hot Dog Krasinski.
Johnny Hot Dog Krasinski.
Yeah, love him. Krasinski, it sounds like Kransky. It works, Tom.
It's there.
It does. Do you know what? I wanted to hope that you just picked that name just cause. Like, not because it related to his name at all, but you're just like, I'm calling you Hot Dog because you're a hot dog.
It works on many levels. He's a hot dog. He's a hot dog of a man, of a director, a writer, an actor. He's a triple threat.
Triple dog.
He's proven himself with this one. Like, obviously, the first movie, it came from a script by those two other dudes. I'm sorry, I've forgotten their names.
Beck and Woods.
Beck and Woods, thank you. And then Krasinski came in and obviously did some edits, rah, rah, rah. I was never 100% sure on the impact Krasinski himself had on that first film. Now that I've watched this one that is pretty much wholly him, I'm like, oh, he is the best parts of the first film as well.
Oh, definitely, yeah. It's the family element. It's the fact, I mean, I think it's the fact that he's got kids.
Yeah.
And he said, someone was telling us this, I think he made these films as like a love letter to his kids, which is kind of like, it's cute on the one hand, but it's also like, does he hate his kids?
Well, here's what I find disturbing at that fact is, in the first one of his kids dies horrifically.
Yes.
True.
Yeah.
Hey, he knows the value of his kids and they can really pack a punch.
That was him teaching them a lesson. It's like, don't you fuck around with toys. Don't fuck around when we're at the supermarket.
You don't grab stuff unless I tell you to put it in the trolley, okay?
It's Arrested Development, how George Sr. would have those elaborate things to stop the kids from doing
things. That's right. Yeah, the one-armed man.
Yeah, that's right. Beware the one-armed man. I guess one thing is it's one of those things where Quiet Place is such a great, tight, well-made film. You kind of go, do I need a sequel? And the answer is,
yeah,
we do, because that was also a tight, well-made, brilliant film that is just full of fucking fantastic characters, fantastic performances, and just tension up its asshole.
Yes. Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's so fucking tense. It's equally as tense as the first one, which you wouldn't have thought would be possible.
No.
I think it's clear, too, from watching it, that when he was writing it and making it, he very much wants this to be a trilogy.
Mm.
Because I think the only knock I would probably have on it is, I think it's a little sluggish in the middle, but for me, it's a very, very abrupt ending.
Yes. Yeah.
The ending itself is sensational, and we'll cover that because it's fucking powerful.
Yeah.
But the very final shot, and it just ends and it's credits. And it's like, if that was the end of this story, you've got to have her reunited with her family.
100%.
You know what I mean? You've got to have the mum coming to the island with the kids or whatever. You've got to have them hug it out. But they don't, and it's clear that it's going somewhere bigger.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if you guys remember when we were at uni together, there was this one guy who came in, a filmmaker, and he talked about how he realized that almost every film needs an epilogue, even if it's just one scene that's super short and super, like, if your characters win the day, we need to see the benefit of them winning the day, which would be her reuniting with her family and having that moment.
Yeah.
And it stuck with me, like, even in my own writing, it's not enough to just, like, you know, you want to get in late and leave early, but you also, leaving early also means that you do want to show, the win, the normal life now that they've had the win and how good it is, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah, this movie was definitely missing that.
Because it's like when you watch sport. And your team has a great win, right? Like maybe they kick a goal after the siren and they win the game. You don't turn the TV off immediately and cut to credits.
Right.
You want to watch the crowd hugging each other, the players, 100%. The coach going crazy. You want to see the emotional sort of outburst.
You're going to sing along with that song. You're going to have the best time. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it, dude.
Do you think the first film achieves that epilogue?
See, it
no.
It doesn't.
It's got a very abrupt ending.
Yeah.
They both end abruptly.
Which is really interesting. I guess the epilogue for that would be to see her shoot the monsters. Which wouldn't have been as cool an ending as her cocking a shotgun.
Yeah, true.
Where, but I agree because I had the same thought. I'm like, oh, it's just following on the tradition of the first one. Very abrupt ending. which is that late in, early out. Yeah. But then I also agree with Sean. I think, yeah, it's clear that this is the second in a trilogy, which, to be honest, I'm fine with. The second movie in a trilogy is usually the shittest. It's that middle, it's that heavy second act. If this is the shittest one, oh boy.
Ooh.
I am looking forward to that final act.
I am shocked by this revelation that the second one is the worst one of the trilogy. And I'm going to give you three examples why that's untrue.
Okay.
Toy Story 2 fucking rips. Godfather Part 2 fucking rips. Shrek 2 rips.
All of these I agree with, Tom. I'm more talking about...
Empire Strikes Back.
I'm more talking about trilogies that are planned as trilogies from the get-go. They're really one story. All those examples you spoke of, they stand alone as a singular story, I guess. Which, look, maybe this probably falls more into that category anyway, because it was never intended to be a trilogy. But I guess there have been movies in the past where the first movie does really well and they're like, oh, we should make a trilogy out of this. And then the second movie is clearly just there to set up the third movie, which is pretty good, and the second movie is pretty shit.
Matrix Reloaded.
100%, Sean. Yes.
Yeah. I would argue, though, Reloaded is better than Revolution.
Yeah, I haven't watched them in years.
Yeah, I feel so little for either of them that I don't care. I don't care.
I think they're both shit, but I think if I was to rewatch them, I would enjoy the third one better.
Nah. Nah, no fucking way. The second one has the awesome car chase with the truck and and Lawrence Fishburne on the motorbike.
Yes, Tom, it's got great stunts that were filmed 20 years ago, whereas the third one's got a little bit more emotional content. But hey, they're both shit. So, you know. A Quiet Place 2, not shit. Very good. Very good.
Not shit at all. No.
Boys, was wondering how this would go with the fact that even though we know that Krasinski is there in a flashback at the start of the film,
mm-hmm.
you lose a great performance. Millicent is still off her fucking head good in this movie.
Unreal.
So fucking good. But it's like, okay, you've lost one of the four big, it's a very small cast.
Mm.
You've lost a cog. How do you fill that void? And the answer is you get Cillian Murphy and he hits it out of the fucking park.
Yep.
Yeah, he does.
He's terrific. Yep. I was looking at his filmography after this film and I was like, man, he kind of hasn't done much for a while. But then I thought, I haven't watched this show, but he's been doing Peaky Blinders for, you know, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where he's been. Yeah. He's a terrific actor. He's fucking so good. Yeah. He's so sort of understated and restrained. It's a great role. It's similar in what Johnny Boy did in the first one, but it's just sort of a different side of that character.
Yes. Well, here's the thing for this character and these movies on a whole is like because of the premise in that sound can't be used, it adheres to the golden rule of screenwriting, which is show, don't tell, because they can't tell. They can't have dialogue be the crutch it so often can be where it is telling the audience the shit they need to know. Like literally... It's perfect. And to have an actor like Cillian Murphy, who is an understated, restrained actor, like this setting is perfection for him because it's all in the delivery. It's all in the emotion that's taking place across his face. It's all in those little elements that just fucking sell it. Like, honestly, like he's sensational. The one scene that really got me was when after they make it to the island, him and Millicent, Regan Abbott, And he says, you're right, I'm not like your father, as the callback that she laid in early. That is powerful. Him saying, I'm not like your father, that's powerful. Then it doubles down by saying, but you are. And you're like, whoa, I'm blown away. And then it triples down because he goes onto the beach, takes out the picture that he drew of his wife, and he doesn't cry, which is what I thought he was going to do. Instead, he laughs and smiles. And it fucking knocked me out of the park. Like I couldn't recover from that.
Yeah.
it's like in that moment because he's done, like, because it's implied that he killed his wife because she was dying. And there's a line where he says sometimes the pain got too much, almost like she was too loud because she was in so much pain. Mm. So he, and her body's still there. And so it's highly implied that he killed her out of mercy and is just carrying that around like the biggest backpack in the world.
Yeah.
And it's the first time in the movie where he literally is just, it's also, he's just in a t-shirt and pants.
He's not
got any other layers on. He's literally just all of the weight of all of the choices he's made.
Yeah. Well, one thing I love about the film is hope. It's so present. And it's so powerful. And you can, I think, easily make the case that Regan saved Cillian Murphy's life.
Mm.
Because I think it's so easy to look at his character and the shit he's already gone through. That character would have just killed himself, I think. it wouldn't have been far off. And then they've come into his life
yep.
and given him life again. And it's fucking beautiful. And it's that same thing where Regan's learned, she learned everything she could from her dad, but she wasn't ready yet. She needed another teacher. And then he compliments that with new lessons.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It's great.
And it's such a nice, like the comparison for his character and the John Krasinski character is that they're the same person in a lot of ways. They're also complete opposites because John Krasinski died to save the rest of his family, where for Cillian Murphy's Emmett character, the rest of his family died and he's alive. And now he has no purpose. He has nothing to do. And like even in that first film, how Krasinski says, no, she says to him, if we can't save them, who are we?
Yeah.
And that's what he's grappling with. Like, that's what this Emmett character is grappling with. It's so perfect. But in through that, he also, like you said, has these lessons for Regan's character. And likewise, she gives him stuff that, you know, it's fucking fantastic.
Yeah. That whole thing, like, I got the vibe watching it that, like, even when they first arrive in that train yard and he doesn't help them. Like, he would recognize them. Of course he fucking would. They live in the same tiny town. He knows them by name. Emily Blunt recognizes him straight away.
Yeah.
He doesn't save them.
No. Nope.
Until he absolutely has to, until his safety is compromised.
He lets Marcus walk into a fucking bear trap. He's looking through the scope as Marcus walks into that. That is a horrific scene of him walking into that bear trap.
Yeah, and then he's like, you only can stay for 3 seconds. She shows him the baby and he's like, don't give a shit. I always took that as like, he wants them gone. He's like a day away from just putting a bullet in his head.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely.
Yeah.
And then he has his own little journey and that beat where they're on the docks and he tells her to dive.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so good.
So good.
Let's just talk about the intro, the opening sequence where Johnny Boy's back in it, which is great. It's a pleasure to have him back.
It really is. Yeah.
And it's such a well-made thing. Damo, I think you were saying this after the film. It's so clever too to just have a silent, deserted town.
Yes.
And then his car rolls into it. And then, of course, it's quiet because everyone's at the local baseball game or whatever it
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
And it's great. And then you see everybody there. And it's cool just to fill in the world a bit. You have the alien spaceship landing on the planet and everybody freaking out and it's fucking great.
Well, here's something I really loved about that opening scene as well. Again, we're talking about the show don't tell aspect of it. During that baseball game, when the meteors come down, no one says anything. Everyone just slowly gets their family and gets the fuck out of there. Like it is the epitome of show don't tell because we as an audience watching that, we're like, you don't need to explain it to us in dialogue. You don't need to have people screaming. You don't have people going, what was that? Oh, my God. Was that a meteorite?
Yep.
No, fuck all that. Cut that out of there. Keep this a tight 90. Get the family to quietly rush to the car because they are terrified already. Like, it is so perfect.
Yeah. On that too, Damo, it's going to be fascinating to watch what Krasinski writes and directs next because he's had two perfect crash courses now in just not writing bullshit dialogue.
Yes, yeah, dude.
Like, he's just going to be tuned into that frequency. Wow. So he could make some really great stuff.
Yeah.
And I worried that the quality of this wouldn't be as good. But thematically, visually, every element of this is probably the equal of the first film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's fucking good. I'm really excited to see what he does next. I think he's a great director.
Couldn't agree more, yeah.
The thing that I love too, and we've talked about this with sequels as well, shows just how safe hands we are if the big hot dog himself is making more movies. Is Damo, you asked that question about what makes a sequel good, I think, once before when we were talking about sequels.
Yep.
And it takes the first thing and just like cranks it up a bit and does it beautifully. And they learn all these lessons that they're stronger together.
Yep.
If they work together, they've got a shotgun plus her hearing aids, all that they can take on the world. And you have that sequence where they kill a monster when Marcus is in the bear trap because they're working together.
Yes.
And you have all of that happening. And so the course of the movie gets to the midpoint and is like, all of them are split up.
Split them up. Yeah, baby, yeah.
Split them up.
Yeah.
They are all facing a problem on their own. And even though it's like, I never remember anyone's name because no one talks in this fucking movie. But Emily Blunt, her whole story is just she's got to go back and deal, like, go and get medicine for her son while also dealing with the fact that her husband is dead.
Yeah.
Her other son is still dead. There's all these things hanging over. She goes off on this little journey. Marcus has to try to be the dad, the man that I guess John Krasinski was trying to make him be.
Yeah.
Millicent has to be the dad that she is.
Yeah.
They're all trying to be different kinds of dads.
Yeah.
You know?
That's nice. And like, there's a few things that I love in that is that like, for Marcus the Marcus character, he's still scared. The whole film was like about how scared he is. And while he managed to get a moment of bravery at the end of the first one, that hasn't stopped him from being scared. In fact, that moment of bravery happened at the same time that he lost his dad. So, like, the fact that we see him multiple times throughout this film reject bravery, like when Millicent tells him, I need to be able to spread the sound of this earpiece out to the rest of the world so other people have the same weapon that we have. And he literally says, I'll tell mum. I'll tell her right now. Like, he's like, it's such a cowardly act, but it's also so you can totally empathize with it. And then likewise, when Emily Blunt's character goes to leave and he comes out of the hatch and begs her not to. Like, he's so fearful throughout, which again, which the ending, which we'll get to in just a moment, only makes him more powerful. But then also what Evelyn's character, Emily Blunt, one, I love that she's not the protagonist in this film. Both the kids are, I would say, are the major protagonist.
Yep.
And I would say it's both of more Millicent, but definitely both of them have an arc in this film. But then her arc is to go get the oxygen tanks. And the oxygen tanks are also such a great set piece because they serve two roles. They are both a ticking clock because we see how close they are to the red, that they're constantly going down. But they're also the MacGuffin. We need these tanks to keep the baby alive, to keep us alive. It's the structuring of this film and how tight it is. I can't get over it. Like, it honestly, it blows me away. I can't think of another film that does it this well other than the first one.
Yeah. And there's that scene where Marcus is terrified that his mum's leaving and leaving him with the baby. And he's like, yeah, I don't know how to look after it. I find that very relatable. And I think a lot of people would. Anyone who's got kids or anyone who's got nieces or nephews, there's going to be like a point where you have to sort of look after that kid and you just feel like, I can't do that. I don't know what to do.
Yes.
What if they cough wrong? What do I do?
Right.
So yeah, I bought into his fear completely.
Yep. Yeah.
And Emily Blunt, Evelyn's character is extraordinary as well. Because when you think about it, in the timeline of this film, she's basically, when the film starts, she's had a baby less than 24 hours.
Right.
Before that, like a traumatic birth. In real life,
yeah,
you would still be in hospital under observation. Yeah, like, it's insane.
She's had a baby and lost her husband in the space of a day.
Yeah.
Less than
and
a day.
Stood on a nail.
And well. I tell you what, if we want to talk about cranking things up, we take the repeated shots of the nail from the first film and we turn them into the towel and the latch on that fucking container.
Oh, yeah, well done. Yes. Yeah.
Every time it closes.
But even just having the nail. Like, there's a scene where someone goes down the stairs and they fucking show that nail and you just have, like, fucking flashbacks. You just feel shit. You're like, no, God,
PTSD,
no.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And then just my last thing before we move on. We could literally talk about this all day, I'm sure. But, again, that sequel element of elevating both the stakes and the world while dealing with the ramifications of the first one, which clearly this one does because it follows on directly from the first one. But it also elevates the world because we see the people. I really loved Killian's line about the people out there aren't worth saving.
Yeah.
I thought that, like, again, one line to tell us everything. He could have given a detailed synopsis of who these people are and why they're terrible and they've gone savage and blah, blah, blah. Instead, he had that one line and that's everything we need to know. And so, great, we've expanded the world beyond just the monsters, that it's become a dangerous world. And then the other thing I really liked was the sprinkler scene where the fire alarm goes off and the sprinklers come out. Because obviously in the first one we saw that white noise, in particular related to water, is a really great way to stop their hearing. And so that the sprinkler system going off and basically semi-deafening the aliens, I thought that was perfect. Like, again, that's such a good stretching of that idea and but taking it a little bit further and seeing what else we can do with it.
It's so clever. I'm in awe of this film, actually. I think I've rated it too lowly. I gave it 4 stars. I think it's better than that.
You're a piece of shit, Sean.
Yeah. But just on your thing, Damo, about what Killian says about, you know, the people out there aren't worth saving. You almost forget about that until you come into contact with a few of those people later and you're like, oh, okay.
Fuck.
It's such a sinking feeling. Just looking at them and you just, like, they're the kind of characters you look at and immediately you go, oh, fuck. No.
Yeah.
They're fucked.
Yep. Scoot McNairy is perfect to be the man that he is in that brief scene. He's the perfect. Yeah. The only other actor that would have been good at that would be Ben Mendelsohn 20 years ago.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Just
someone
who looks wrong somehow. Like, and just, again, the world building is so good. In the first film, you have all the sand and all the little tools they have. The fact that the weapon that those guys use is just a bag of cans with a rope around it. They just tie around Murphy's neck. If he tries to move it, it makes noise. He can't run. He can't fight. He can't do anything but just stand there.
Yeah.
which again is just like the, I guess, Krasinski and whoever else was involved, really thinking through this world and coming up with, like we talked about in the previous episode, about they had they'd marked the spots on the creaky floor of where you could stand, and they obviously had the sand parts. And again, throughout this film, I'm sure if I did a rewatch, I would see even more of that. Like it's still thinking through all those elements of every single way, this singular element of these aliens landing on Earth and all the tiny ramifications that have happened or all the tiny little details you need to include because, yeah, the world has changed in this very extreme way.
Hmm.
And I would be remiss if we also didn't talk about the ending. So, Sean, you mentioned it before. Did you want to give us your thoughts on that?
Honestly, the height of this kind of filmmaking, we'll call it sort of studio reasonable budget filmmaking, mm-hmm. is when you can have an emotional cross-cutting scene and just the way that they built up to it. And so basically we've got Regan getting the job done on her end and her brother finding his courage and just the matching shots, the imagery of it, and just it honestly just blows me away.
Mm.
It is the perfect ending right up until they do sort of the abrupt cut to credits.
Right.
But like, it's way more powerful than you, like, I wouldn't have thought they could do something as powerful as Hot Dog screaming at the end of the first one.
Yeah.
Just that guttural, emotional cry.
Mm-hmm.
And they've matched it. I don't know. I won't say it's better because that's a huge moment.
That's massive. Yeah,
but this is just as good.
It's comparable.
And it's beautiful. Yeah. I love that the first one's the parent and now it's the children.
Yeah.
Who are we if we can't protect them? And now it's basically the kids protecting the parents. Yeah. That's great.
And it is honestly such a powerful moment for reasons I'll get to into a second. But I just want to talk about the parent. So, yeah, you see Emily Blunt's face when Marcus goes out. He finally finds his bravery, like a real act of bravery, not just a reactionary moment of bravery. He is stepping out. We see him literally step out while his sister's doing the same. It is so good. And he's being brave. And Emily Blunt's face isn't like even admiration or pride or anything like that. It's this moment of shock of her realizing, oh, fuck, they can look after themselves now. And it's...
Yep.
What a choice. Like, what a choice in this movie to have that as her reaction. I thought that was sensational.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mm-hmm. All right. Were we scared?
100%.
Yeah.
Wanted to die.
100%. Yeah.
For the characters. It's that fear of, I love every character in this, and I hope no one gets hurt.
The tension.
Exactly right.
And everything is just terrifying. The tension is
they
so scary.
They just keep cranking it. That scene where it's like, I think it's... No, it's the same where she's just on the train and they're just building and building. You're like, nothing's happened for so long. Something has to go wrong. She's on a train.
Exactly.
It is bad. There is noise. There's so many things that could just fuck up here. And again, does that genuinely horrific thing of the fact that she cannot hear and you get that great shot of her sitting on the ground of the train. It's just a thing climbing in behind her.
Yep.
And neither her nor the thing know that the other one is there.
Yeah. Yep. It is. It's huge. And, like, I really didn't think I was going to be as tense as the first one. The first one, obviously, a powerhouse of tension. As well as, like, we know more. We, like any sequel, the allure of the unknown of like, the being amazed at how good this premise is and everything they do with it, I would have thought that would lessen. It didn't, because they've done so well. But even to go back to that early scene where we know that this family is going to get away from it. We've seen what happens. That did nothing to stop me from being so tense in that opening scene. And like even the shot that I'd seen in the trailer of the bus coming at the family car while Emily Blunt's driving backwards and then you see the creature crawl out the front of the bus, it still got me just as much. Like I was still edge of my seat. It is
She said it's not even acting in that scene. Oh, she was really? Just genuinely terrified because they've got the bus, I think, coming at like 40 miles in that direction.
Yeah,
the creature design continues to just be awesome because, like we've said with horror films, when you see something enough, it shouldn't be frightening anymore, but it still is. There's just levels and layers to this thing that are just like really yuck and just creepy and it's brilliant.
It's the fact that they have no face, that they are just Nothing. Like, there's no... It's one of those things where they are so... It's why the xenomorph in Aliens is so scary. It's something with eyes and a mouth. You're like, oh, that's kind of... I can see how that works. Mm-hmm. These things and the alien and alien you look at and you're like, I don't understand why you are the way that you are. I hate it. There is no relatable feature to you at all.
Yeah. And the thing that got me in this one was the speed. Like, in literally one of the first shots, you see one move across the landscape. And the speed, the creepy, like, spider-like speed, the way they move across that landscape, it's revolting in some way. Yeah. Like, it triggers something in me that just freaks the fuck out.
Yeah, speaking of triggered, like, it triggers fear when there's sound. So, the bear trap scene, him screaming is obviously horrifying. Yeah. And I love that he has that sort of couple of seconds where it's just shock. Like, there isn't any screaming or pain because it's just pure adrenaline and shock. And then he screams. And he screams for so long and so loud that I was just shitting myself.
Yeah.
It's so terrifying.
And she can't quieten him down. She can't make him quiet. And it's like, shut up. I know you're in pain, but you need to shut up. But I also understand why you can't shut up.
Yeah.
But her acting is sensational as well, because in that moment, I think you can see in her face, that's a mother who's like, we're going to die.
I think.
Because she's like, how could we not? Like, he is so loud. We're just fucked.
But yeah, and so the tension is so huge throughout, and this is what I was going to talk about with the ending, because when the ending comes, not only is it a powerful, perfect ending where these two amazing child actors that just blow me away with their talent are delivering the goods and it's shot perfectly, rah, rah, it's also the first breath I've taken in 90 minutes. It is like, it is a final exhalation. And like, with that relief and the powerfulness of that moment, it surges. Like, it literally reaches heights I wasn't ready for. Because even as Millicent's character is walking towards the creature and it's spasming because she's ratcheted up the volume. And there was this little thought in my head that said, stab it through the head. Like, I just wanted that moment of like that real hero moment. And then she picks up that chunk of metal rebar or whatever it was, and I'm like, oh fuck, she's gonna do it. It is perfect in every way.
I'll tell you what else is perfect is the choice to reuse that theme, that music score from the first film.
Great, just that emotional core
of the movie, really. That's such perfect music.
Yeah,
and it just elicits that feeling in you. That's great. It's such a good, every choice made in this film is pretty much perfect.
Well, then let's get to our next question, which is, did our characters act wisely or foolishly?
I think under the circumstances, I mean, you could look at Regan and be like, come on, mate. Don't be a fucking idiot. But also, her intentions are so noble that you kind of forgive it. And the same with the brother making the error of shutting the door. I'm more forgiving of that because I'm like, I would panic too.
I'll chip myself.
I think here's the thing. Like, in answering, I think I'm, you know, jumping the gun a bit, but like, we didn't survive the first
No, we didn't.
We're not surviving this one. We didn't even get to this point.
We're not even alive.
So any choices they make, even if they're not great choices, I get why they're being made.
I will, look, there's one nitpicky moment that I'm going to call out, which is Marcus's character. So when he's alone with the baby and he goes exploring and finds the corpse of Emmett's wife. I don't really know why he's doing that. I think he's gone out to sort of like scan the horizon for mum because he just want, like, there's enough there for me to go, he's just like hoping he can see her so this might end soon. Like, he's looking for a glimmer of hope on the horizon and then obviously gets distracted, finds the corpse, makes a noise, calls alien to him. Like, but also I'm like, just like, be the coward you are, mate. Just like, hole up in your little hole with the baby and just wait a little bit longer. That would be my only thing.
I think there's one other person who makes a fatal mistake that actually seems to fly in the face of who that person is, and that is Cillian Murphy approaching the girl at the dock. He has no time for any human being on Earth.
Right.
I don't know where the being with Regan has softened him up.
Yeah,
but at that point, when he goes over to like, hey, are you okay? It's like, mate, you've talked, you know that there's bad shit going on, unless he assumes that that's the radio tower people. I don't know.
I think by that point, he just mellowed out just enough to care about the well-being of a small child. Not his finest moment. Also, taking the boat over to the island and the assumption that they won't be followed.
Well, that's a pretty fair assumption because they can't swim.
Yeah, we do see one long drown, distance, basically.
Yeah, but I don't think they don't really know that, though, do they? Until they get to the island. Like, the island people know they can't swim. Does he know they can't swim?
He seems to assume that they can't swim.
Yeah, okay. Dangerous assumption.
Yeah.
It falls into the water and it immediately starts to drown.
Yeah. But I think he's not really, he doesn't have the ability to notice that, does he? I think he's panicking in that moment. He's trying not to drown and trying not to make noise.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's just bad luck, really, that a boat sort of got unmoored and floated over. Yeah.
I mean, this movie's so tightly structured that there isn't a lot. Yeah, you have to kind of really nitpick.
I will nitpick the island folk.
Okay.
Someone, they should have like a watchtower.
Ah, yeah.
They've got complacent. Yeah,
yeah. Any boats floating over.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be able to be snuck up upon by two people who have reached your island on a boat. You should have like a quarantine process where if a boat shows up, it's like, we've got to check it for a monster.
Yeah, that's really good actually, dude. Yeah, the fact that these two people just walk up unannounced. Yeah, yeah, you're right. That they should have seen them coming a mile away. They should have been ready to like burn the boat if they needed to. That's a really good point. Yeah. All right, boys. So how would we do? So we're dead.
We're dead.
So we'll remain dead.
Yep.
And that's it.
That's it.
Okay.
I don't like... We'd be, for exactly the same reason, we're fucked in the first movie. Yeah. We're fucked in this movie.
Yeah. Big time.
The only thing it'd be is, are we on the island? And then we have to, like, but we'd be fucked again.
We would be too loud on the island.
Yeah.
They'd hear our partners coughing and our dogs barking and they would hear it. They'd hear it.
Our loud pisses and farts.
Yeah. As well as, like, they've got an excuse to party because there's more people who have survived. They got our message, rah, rah, rah.
Yeah.
You're just in fucking party mode. Like, there is zero defense up for a fucking alien springing on you.
Yeah. That's Fantasy Island.
Yeah. I've got to say, Sean, that you're like, oh, why don't they have a guard tower? We wouldn't have a fucking guard tower.
Do you think complacency? Too much partying and they've just like, oh, whatever.
You're sinking beers. You just
You know what? There's a guard tower and it's our shift and we're not there.
We're hanging out with Cillian Murphy and Jimon Hounsou.
I love Jimon Hounsou. He's so great.
He gets fucked over in so many
movies. He does. He's a real bit player, but he's powerful. I do think it's way too late in the game for him to have like a monologue. I just think it's like, come on, man, there's 5 minutes left in this film. Don't try and take me to emotional places with your brilliant acting.
Oh, and now you're dead.
He already took me to emotional places with his brilliant sweater wearing. I was that man. Great. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I wish he'd survived.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Could have built a third film around that man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's like us, dead.
We're as dead as Deshaun. Well, on that note, that is all the scary talk we have for this episode. I've been Damien.
I've been Sean.
And I've been Tom.
If you scary listeners would like to get in contact with us, you can email us at 3scaredboys@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter at scaredyboys, or individually, I'm at Midday Pajamas.
I'm at Carney from 55.
And I'm an awkward treat.
Stay scared, everyone.
Johnny Hot Dog Krasinski.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code Program.